Martha, what's your earliest memories of your childhood?
The thing I remember, the very first memory that I have is when I was, I must have only been about 2.5 or 3, and my father and mother were on their way to California. My dad had to go there to work in the woods to pay the mortgage on our farm. It was the middle, the depths of the Depression, and they had trouble paying off the debts on the farm. And so Dad would go to California and work in the woods, we called it. He would saw logs and work as a logger.
Do you know the name of the place that was? Susanville?
Susanville, California. And I remember we were going out and then ride the train. And when we got on the train, it was the first black woman I'd ever seen, black person, and she offered me some popcorn. It was a big black, I guess you'd call her a mammy-looking lady, real kind-looking lady. And that's my very first memory. And then I remember just a little bit about California. Just we lived in a little tiny cabin out in the woods, and Mother took care of, there was three of us. It was when Dennis, my younger brother, was a baby. And that's my first memory.
What a neat memory. Do you have any early recollections of your home on Bitter Creek?
Oh, yes. But maybe I better mention another of my very first memories. It was when my Grandpa Barris died. I was only 4 years old at the time. And, of course, in those days, they didn't have any embalming or anything like that. And they had laid Grandpa out in our bedroom, in Mother's bedroom, on the bed. And one of my jobs was to go out and fill quart bottles with snow. He died in May, wasn't it? And there was still snow. It was a real high snow year. And then they would pack these bottles around his body to keep him cold. And then I also remember my Aunt Margaret, a comment she made. She says, "Grandpa never would let me cut his fingernails. I want to cut his fingernails." And I remember she took some scissors and cut his fingernails while he was lying there dead in the casket. And I always remembered that. And then I remember I got new red socks to wear for the funeral. And I do remember the house. And it's a lot like the memories you had, Marge. It was cold. I remember how cold we got in the winter, but I also remember just good times. We had lots of good times in our old family home, and lots of fun in the summer. And we were real close to our cousins who lived right next door. Spent a lot of time with my cousin Patsy. I remember her the best because she was my age. And my dad and my Uncle Gene had a partnership on the farm, and they worked together. And I remember we didn't especially care much for Uncle Gene's wife, Aunt Ruth, because she was a little sharp with us. But Uncle Gene was wonderful, and we used to enjoy, I used to enjoy playing with my cousins. And I'm sure you remember that too, don't you, Marge?
Yes, I do. Beverly was the one that I played with.
Mm-hmm.
And Brent and Dennis were pretty much the same age. And if there were several good stories about them doing all sorts of things that they shouldn't.
Oh, yeah.
But they had a good time. And they were teased by the hired hands we had. They would make, like, they'd give them a penny if they'd hold spug eggs in their mouths and...
Oh, all even baby of, birds.
Yeah,
I remember that.
And their nicknames were Cricket and Grasshopper, and I think they ate their legs. They were, but they were happy.
Yeah, we had good memories. I remember It seemed like Mom worked awfully hard, but she always had pretty flowers. We had a big flower garden out front, and she would work in her flowers a lot. And I remember she'd get really mad at Dad because the pigs would get in and root up her bulbs, and she was always upset about that. And
Martha, tell us about when Dad and Uncle Gene had all those turkeys.
Well, Uncle Mitt, Mom's brother, older brother, was quite an organizer and seemed to know how to get things done. And he would go into business and be more daring than I think Uncle Gene and Dad would ever have been. Dad was a good farmer, but Uncle Mitt had the ideas, and he knew that turkeys would be a good investment. And so I remember one year they went into partnership with Uncle Mitt and bought 10,000 turkeys. Now that was quite a few in those days. And I remember what a job it was. They would have to move them from one place to another down on the flat to keep disease down, and they would have to keep the varmints away. There was lots of young men that would like to steal them to have turkey suppers. And there was lots of most of them?
Foxes. Coyotes and owls.
Uh-huh. And so one of my jobs was to go down. They had a little place where you could sleep. And we'd go and stay in that little house, and that was supposedly to keep off the varmints, keep the varmints from coming and taking the turkeys. And then there was one year, they went into this venture 2 or 3 years in a row, but the one year was kind of a disaster because there was a hailstorm, and turkeys are quite stupid. And when the hailstorm hit, the turkeys panicked, and they all ran up against a fence and piled up in big piles and died. And they lost 2,500 of them out of that. Fortunately, they had insurance on them, but I remember they tried to save a lot of them. I remember they'd hang them up in our old barn, and my brother Dennis was especially a good picker, and our job was to pick those turkeys because they were big by then and they were prime, ready for market. And they hated to see them waste, and really they weren't hurt that much. They got them shortly after they died, I guess, and there was a Chinese restaurant in Ogden that bought a lot of them. So that kind of gives you an idea of what you can eat when you go to a Chinese restaurant, maybe. But they would buy some of those, and I remember doing that. I helped pick those turkeys.
What did I?
You remember that, March?
They'd hire kids to come from school and work on them after school. They'd get off of the bus, and I remember Jay Harmon and some of them that would come and pick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was quite a venture.
And some of them would get a disease called blackleg, and then they'd have to kill them.
And eventually that led to the breaking up of Uncle Gene and Dad's partnership, because the next summer they decided to take this turkey operation down to Wendell, Idaho, because they thought the turkeys would do better down there. It was a drier climate, and they wouldn't get this blackleg that had killed so many up here in Star Valley. So Uncle Gene decided to move down there with his family and take care of this part of the venture. But he liked it down there, and they decided to move there permanently. And that's when Dad bought Uncle Gene's part of the farm, and that was the end of the partnership. But we had good memories of Uncle Gene and their family.
Uncle Gene and Dad did a lot of fun things. Tell them about when they were stacking hay. Do you remember that story?
Is that when he knocked him off?
Yeah, knocked Dad off the stack. The load, he pushed it up really fast, and this hay just knocked Dad right off the stack.
And then they'd laugh.
Yeah, well, he thought he'd killed him. He went around there, and he was scared. And he didn't kill him, of course, but he could have.
Oh, I'll say. Yeah, they had, but they had a very good partnership. They had thought a lot of each other. I do think that my dad took the brunt of the work on the farm. He was the one, he was a good farmer, and he's the one that did a lot of the really hard, back-breaking irrigation and farming on the tractor. Uncle Gene was...
horses.
He took care of the horses, and Uncle Gene also drove a milk truck a lot. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
He would take milk to the creamery, and he was also the one that... in those days, they would go a long ways away to pick up a car. Cars were hard to get. It was during the war, or close to the war, wasn't it?
It was before the war.
Before the war. And I think Uncle Gene and Aunt Ruth went clear back to Detroit one year to get a truck. And we always had pickups. We never had sedans. We always had pickups because that's what they used on the farm. It was definitely a working venture. We had lots of work and not much money.
I recall what Uncle Gene said about Dad. He spoke at Dad's funeral, and he said that Cy had taken him under his wing when he had married Ruth and taught him everything he knew about farming because his dad had died. And
that's right.
He didn't have anybody to help him, and Dad was very good to Uncle Gene.
He was. He was a good... And nobody could please my dad when it came to irrigating. No one could do it quite like he did.
That's right.
He was a good, very good farmer. There was people from all over Fairview that would come to seek his advice,
mm-hmm.
and he was a good farmer. My job... Marge kind of liked to work out with Dad and be in the outdoors, but I have memories of helping Mother in the kitchen mostly, and I helped her get meals. We had so many people to cook for.
Do you remember it was really great fun for us when we had droves of company in the summer, and mm-hmm. Mother would go, oh. And we'd just, oh boy, cousin.
Here comes cousin.
And it was so hard for Mother to take care of everything she had to and take care of company. And my heart goes out to her now. But then it was fun for us.
I agree. The only thing you didn't like, Marge, I remember you'd be upset when they'd take some of your cats home.
I know.
She loved cats, and the cousins from the city would want to take one of those cute little kitties home, and Marge didn't like that.
No, I didn't.
But
I had plenty of them. I shouldn't have cared.
But it was really hard work for Mom and Dad. But I don't think we realized how hard it was in those days. It was. I don't think Mother ever made me work really hard. Do you remember feeling that way, Marge?
Mm-hmm. Like, and I only got one whipping, and I deserved it. The razor strap was hanging in the bathroom, and it was always a threat, but Dad never used it on us.
No, but we were sure scared of it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I did get one whipping. What was your whipping for?
Swearing.
And mine was for swimming in the duck pond.
Mm.
We had a duck pond up above the house, and Mother had warned us not to go swimming up there because she knew it was a kind of a slough, and it would be hard, lots of germs.
Well, Martha, remember how scared Mother was of polio. All these kids were getting polio, and
that's right.
And it was, they didn't know where it was coming from or what was causing it, but all these kids were getting polio, and she didn't want the kids to come from Utah because they might bring it. It was much worse down there. It was,
well, they would send
scary.
Their kids up here just for that reason. And our cousin Gay did get polio.
And Deanne,
that's right. It was a frightening disease in those days, and there was no vaccine at that time. I do remember that.
What are your memories of celebrating your birthday? Was there much fanfare around for your birthdays?
Well, Marge, I'm like you. I don't remember the our folks had time to make much of a fuss about it. But I do remember my dad always giving me a spanking on my birthday, and it seemed to me like he really spanked us pretty hard. Did you remember that?
Oh, I don't remember. I was tough. Tough butt.
I don't know. He'd always say, "And here's one to grow on."
Yeah, that's right.
And he'd give us a good hard whack. I think he was just he was strong, and I just remember it kind of hurt. I never did cry, but I sure remember those spankings. I don't think Mother had time to make us a birthday cake with a candle on. Do you remember?
No, she always made sour cream cakes, and they were just wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
I know one time I went on a picnic with a bunch of kids from Fairview, and she made me just a little sour cream cake, and I wasn't too proud of it, because that's what I had every day, and all the kids thought that was so good, and then changed my mind about Mom's sour cream cakes.
You bet. Mom used, of course, we had cows. That was how we made our living. The milk check is what we depended on. And so Mother made her meals around our milk and eggs and cream. Cream mm-hmm. was what she used in all of her baking.
Mm-hmm.
Her sour cream pancakes were so good, and her waffles. And everything that she cooked was really, really good.
Yeah, it was. We were so lucky. And everybody knew it, and they'd come to our house.
I've also had lots of hired men that I have visited with during the years, and they'll say, "I sure remember working at your house and how good a cook your mother was, and I sure did love her meals." And then they always enjoyed working for Mom and Dad.
Mm-hmm.
And they were always fair with them. And there was one old fellow. He wasn't too bright. Horace Child was his name. And he worked for Dad. And he would eat so much that he couldn't even move the rest of the day. He would eat such a big meal at noon that he was completely useless the rest of the day.
Remember the time Dad, they had roast duck, and they'd all finished eating, and Horace had already eaten a huge amount, and there was one duck left, and Dad says, "Well, you might as well eat that, Horace, hadn't you?" And he says, "Well, believe it well." And he definitely was no good for the rest of the day.
No, no, that's right. I remember having 10 people at the table that Mom had to cook for.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't like going to the store in those days.
No refrigerator.
No, we didn't have a refrigerator till 1940.
When Meryl was born?
Yeah, it was 1940, I think, when we got our first refrigerator. And she made a good meal out of what she grew in the garden, and the milk and eggs and beef. Every year we'd have a sheep. We'd always get a nice lamb from Harry Swenson, and then we had our own pigs. And also we'd have the wild mutton, they called it, once in a while in the fall. Dad would shoot a deer, and that tasted really good too.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember being baptized?
I do. There was no big deal like they have now about being baptized. I don't even remember who baptized us. It was just kind of a routine thing. But I remember I was baptized. I was one of the first ones that was baptized in the old church. They had a baptismal font in the basement. They only used it 2 years. Do you remember that, Marge?
I sure do.
Do you remember when they had water in it?
No.
And later they just used it as a classroom. But I remember they had to put me down twice because my toe kept coming up. And that's what I remember about it. It wasn't anything what you call spiritual or anything. I just remember they said, "No, we'll have to baptize you again. I saw your toe." and then the fact that I was one of the first ones in the old church.
I recall an accident that you had when you were very young. You fell out of a truck.
Definitely.
Hearing about it. Will you tell us about that?
Well, you know, I think I ought to start with my very first I've had a lot. The very first thing that happened to me was when I was around 2, and I was just a toddler walking past the stove, and mother, in those days, they would make a kind of a, before they made ice cream in the old freezers, they would cook a custard, and it was boiling hot, and I went by the stove, and the handle was sticking out, and I must have grabbed it and pulled it down on me, and all that hot syrup. Mother said it was all over my face and back, and oh, they were so scared. They called on Uncle Albert, our good Uncle Albert Barris, and he came and administered to me. And I got over that, and I don't seem to have very many scars from it, as far as I know. Maybe that's what's the matter with my face. But when I was 4 years old, we used to go, we would take a pickup load of kids and go milk every night. We'd have to go up, the cows would be up the canyon or up here away from the house somewhere, and we'd go milk them. And we were on our way back from milking, and there was so many kids in the back that when I fell out, we were sitting on the side of the back, and nobody even noticed when I fell out, I guess. Nobody missed me. And one of our neighbors, Clarence Erickson, happened to be coming down the road, and he found me on the side of the road. And I had a serious injury. It was a fractured skull. And he picked me up and took me home, and of course they took me to the doctor. And the only thing I remember about that, I was only 4, was that they bandaged my head, and it must have looked like a little toy soldier or something, because that's what they call me, the little toy soldier. And I remember I got a few little gifts that I think Aunt Margaret gave me, a little purse, and that's the things you remember. But that was another time that they called on Uncle Albert to administer to me, and I got over that. It was pretty traumatic thing, I'll tell you.
I'll say. You must have had a purpose in this
one. I guess.
What about grade school? Did you like your school?
I always loved school. I loved, my first grade teacher, though, was the same teacher that you had, Marge. It was Barbara Vigil, and I was scared of her. She was a good teacher, but she was so stern. She never smiled, and I remember one time I needed to go to the bathroom, and I didn't dare ask, so I just sat there and peed my pants.
And yeah, that happened in my class, too, but it was another girl that did it. You'd think she'd get tired of cleaning up after him and let him warm up a little bit.
Oh, I should think so. And then I remember one time there was a knock at the door, and at home we always said, "Come in." And I remember I yelled, "Come in." And Mrs. Vigil was really upset with me. You don't do that. I answer the door. You don't do that. But it's funny what you remember. But I do remember what a good teacher she was. She taught us how to read and how to... She was a good teacher. I had her for 2 years.
Who were your other teachers?
Well, we had a Miss Humphreys. Her name was Lola Humphreys, and it was her first year of teaching. That was in the 3rd grade. And I remember Don Kennington and a few of the boys that were in my room were miserable, and they used to tease her. They'd push their desks clear to the back of the room and make a lot of noise, and she would get frustrated, and she'd cry, and, you know, she only lasted 1 year there, and I can understand why. I can't remember that she was a very good teacher, because she had trouble with discipline. Mm-hmm. And then on the 4th grade, I had Esther Crook. And then in the 5th grade, Valette Turner. They were both excellent teachers. And I think in the 6th grade, I had Valette, too. And then I had Esther Crook again in the 7th and 8th.
Mm-hmm. Good teachers.
Who were your teachers, Marge?
I had Barbara and Maud Ransomberg, mm-hmm. Lorraine Bagley, and Barbara Beagle again, and then Esther.
Mm-hmm. Now, explain why you had Lorraine Bagley. Was it during the war?
Yeah, I think it was. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was. And they need somebody to teach us kids. So, and Esther, it seems like Barbara was out of the valley at that time, and then she came back and taught me in sixth grade. And then until the lunches we had were... They were... You tell them, it's your turn.
Well, they weren't the best. Florence Nebaker and who else?
Elda.
And Elda. Florence and Elda were the cooks. And they did make good... I remember their raisin-filled cookies were good, but they certainly couldn't make good soup like my mother, our mother, could.
I didn't even like soup after that.
No, and the other things that they made were very bland, and they just weren't very good. I do remember I liked their raisin-filled cookies, but I do remember standing in line and waiting for those meals, which weren't very good. But, you know, the hot lunches were good. Were nice.
Were good for people.
Mm-hmm. To have. It was, mm-hmm. I remember the first year or two, we took cold lunches. Mm-hmm. And then I think the hot lunches started when I was in about the third grade.
Mm-hmm. Martha, you had a unique experience too, being riding in a trolley to school when you first started school. Tell us about that.
You don't remember that, do you, Marge?
I did buses when I started.
Yes, I certainly do remember that. It was just a covered wagon. And it looked just like the covered wagons that the pioneers came across the plains in. And in the winter, to keep us warm, it had a pot-bellied stove in the center, and then there was benches along each side. And I remember I was sitting too close to that stove one day, and a hot coal popped out and burned me. I remember that. Uncle Lon Kennington was the trolley driver that I remember the best. But it took quite a while to go up and down Bitter Creek to pick everybody up. It was
horses. They all got them in one sleigh.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of kids.
It sure was. And then they switched to tires in the spring when it got real muddy, and sleighs in the winter. I remember my brother Dennis was kind of a mischievous person, and I imagine he had help from some of the other kids.
Don Kennington.
Yeah, but one of the trolley drivers from Spring Creek, Crow Creek, was, we called him Tambu Nebaker and his wife, and they used to tease him, and they'd put snowballs down the...
Throw.
Yeah, and they'd throw them down into
they'd
the chimney.
Throw it up over and it'd go down the chimney.
And yeah, and make them smoke and oh.
Put out their fire.
They'd be so mad. They'd write letters to Mom and Dad and tell them how mean their kids were. And
if they'd ignored them, they wouldn't have done it.
I think so. But it was quite an experience to ride those trolleys. I remember I used to dream that I'd have high heels that would reach. I wouldn't have to climb up. They had a little step that you climb up into the trolley. And I dreamed that I'd get a big pair of high heels and I wouldn't have to climb up. It would just, I could just get right on.
My gosh.
Silly things.
Mm-hmm. What were your teenage years like?
Well, Marge, my teenage years, maybe I better start by telling about a bad accident that happened just before I started in the freshman. It was when I was in the eighth grade. There was a bunch of girls here in Fairview that were messing around. We'd been down to an activity at the church, and we talked one of the mothers into letting us go for a ride in their Jeep. And Joanne Kennington, who was a little bit younger than I was, she would only have been 13, was the driver. And we were going up Bitter Creek here. back down toward the church house. And there was a bunch of kids over on the side of the road, just as we went through what we called Harmonville. And Joanne turned to wave, when we all did, and to look at the kids. And she turned the wheel of the Jeep too quickly, and it flipped the Jeep over. And the girl that was sitting next to me, we were all thrown out, but the girl that was sitting next to me, the Jeep lit on her, and she was killed. And I remember what a terrible shock that was to me. I had a brand new coat that had been lying, I'd taken it off, and it was lying in the back seat, back of the Jeep. And of course it was thrown out too. And after Uncle Albert had checked and saw that she had died, he took my coat and covered her body with it. And I was never able to, I think I'd only worn it once or twice, but I couldn't wear it anymore. Mother had to give it to someone else. But the girl that was killed was Ludine Johns. And we felt really bad because she didn't really want to go with us that day. She says, oh, I don't want to go. I think I'll stay here at the church house. And we talked her into going with us. And it makes you wonder if she'd had a premonition or something. But it really did affect me during my high school years. I was sad about it, and I really, it's like March, like you said when you were talking about your high school years, I felt like I really didn't fit in. And I did have some really good friends, and I did well in my studies. I got good grades, and I did well in journalism. That's when I first got really interested in writing for the paper and things, and I was the editor of the school paper. And but I never felt like I was popular, never dated, never. When I'd go to dances, my brother D would act like I wasn't even there, and I always resented that because he never would dance with me. And I felt bad about that. And I think you were a lot more popular than I was, Marge. You had boyfriends and things more than I did.
I wasn't any hot date, I'll tell you.
I remember going to the Valley On to the dances, and I was a real good wallflower. That's what they called the ones that didn't get asked to dance very often.
Yeah, but we just grew up so good, so we just won't even talk about it.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I felt like I didn't have the right clothes. Mm-hmm. And Mom and Dad, I can't remember. Mom didn't really take us and get fancy clothes for us like some of our neighbors and friends had. And, you know, I didn't have any Janssen sweaters or
Joyce shoes,
things like that. And they don't mean a whit now. It doesn't matter. But at the time, I thought they were quite important.
I remember asking Mother if we could go buy me some school clothes. And she says, well, bring down your clothes and let me see what you've got. And I brought them down. She says, well, looks like you've got all you need. So that was my school shopping.
Yeah, that was the way they felt. Mm-hmm. And they were so careful. And they had just a limited money at the time. And
no debt. I mean,
yeah.
They didn't go into debt unless they had to.
No, and so we did have adequate clothes. Mm-hmm. We never weren't
cold.
Shabby or anything, mm-hmm. but we just didn't have fancy clothes or have what we thought were the in things
mm-hmm.
to wear.
Right.
But I did have a lot of fun in high school. I would like to mention a kind of a traumatic thing that happened when I was a senior. I had gone to tournaments, and one of my classmates, her name was Dorinda Spackman, and she had drank some pop and went into a coma and died right out there. They didn't know that she had sugar diabetes, and she went into a diabetic coma and died right on our trip. And I remember what a shock that was to everybody.
Gosh, Martha, you had a lot of trauma.
I really did. There was a lot of things that happened when I was a kid, another thing that really made a difference to us was the war, because we walked everywhere. Our folks, we didn't have gas money, and what gas they had to use on the farm, and we had drives like you mentioned, March.
Savings
bonds and stamps, and there was such an emphasis on raising money for the war, and everybody thought about the war and talked about the war, and it was, I remember when President Roosevelt died.
I do too.
What a shock. I remember we found out about it while we were at school, and we were standing out there on the front porch of the school, and we were all crying because he was the only president we ever remembered.
And I remember when they came and told us that Ballard Pete had been killed on Okinawa.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, those were traumatic things. Mm-hmm. And do you remember the time that our cousin Emery flew low over the valley? He was a pilot, and he had he came in his big old
B-47.
Was it a B-47 bomber? Uh-huh. Oh, it was huge. And it flew so low that we could even see the grease spots on the belly.
We were running up and down the street chasing it, and I says, "That's my cousin Emery." "Oh, it is not." And he buzzed mother and about scared her to death.
Well, wasn't it when they had the turkeys and they kind of
stampeded? Well, she was hanging clothes out, yeah, and then Eb was harnessing a team. That was his stepdad, and he buzzed him, and his team ran away. It was quite exciting.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure his officers never knew he did that.
I don't think they did either. He had taken a chance doing that. But what a thrill.
Oh, man.
What a thrill it was for us to see that huge bomber. And that would have been in 1944, probably.
Probably.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I remember my mom and dad sitting close to the radio and listening for the news. I remember when Pearl Harbor was bombed. It was 1941. And mom and dad hadn't gone to church that day. I remember we came home from church and mom was sitting there crying. Do you remember that, Marge?
I don't.
And of course dad wasn't crying, but they were very concerned. And then she told us about what had happened, that the Japs had bombed our soldiers, and what a shock that was, and that we were at war. And also, Mother took the Life magazine, Mom and Dad, and I remember reading that and seeing the graphic pictures of the prisoners of war that they'd found. That was later in the war, and how they read it cover to cover. That was about the only coverage they had of the war.
Mm-hmm.
The radio and the Life magazine.
Well, Mother always took a newspaper.
Oh, and the paper.
Mother
That's
always
right.
took a Deseret News.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, she did.
Read it cover to cover.
Mm-hmm. Paper was really important to her.
Mm-hmm. She'd never had enough to read, and she treasured anything to read.
She read all the time.
Mm-hmm.
She would get up early and read, and she loved to read.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I inherited that. I love to read, too.
I inherited Dad's. I go to sleep reading. What kind of books did you like to read?
Well, I remember having an argument with Esther Crook when I was in the eighth grade. I remember I was all wrapped up in Zane Grey books. I thought they were just really good, and she was trying to tell me that they weren't really that good a literature. But I think she was the one that instilled in me the love of good literature. And she was quite a reader, and I do remember I loved Gone with the Wind. I loved to read romantic novels about that time. And Esther always, and so did Valet, they always read to us every day in school.
Yes, they did.
And I remember some of the books they read. We loved them.
Mm-hmm.
And they would usually pick something that was quite interesting, and I remember them reading to us. How important it is for a adults to read to children.
Yes, I should say. Tell us about going to college, Martha. You went to college.
Well, after I graduated from high school, there was Lillian Hoops and Lucille Hoops and I and Joanne Kennington. There was four of us from Fairview thought we would go into nurses training together. So we went down to Logan and all entered this nurses training program. And for some reason, I did not care for nursing. I remember one time I was trying to give this big fat man a, we were out on the floors doing some demonstration nursing in our training, and I had to give him an enema, and I had a terrible time. A terrible time. And I remember right then I decided I'm in the wrong profession.
I think I would too.
And so after that, I finished up that semester, and then I told the folks I didn't want to stay in nurses training. I think Joanne and Lucille both finished and became nurses, but
did Joanne?
Or was it Lillian? Joanne and Lillian. They stayed in. But then I went just to college, and I took English and things that I loved and literature, and it was really a treat to get away from nursing.
And then, what did you do after that, Martha?
Well, you know, that was the time that I went to Ogden to get a job. And I was always pretty good at typing, and so I took a typing test and passed it. And I got a job at Utah General Depot. Of course, this was shortly after the war, and there was still a lot of, it was also the time when they were worried about communism, and I remember they had to, it was the McCarthy era when they were trying to hunt out communists in America, and I remember I had to be investigated before they'd hire me. And they talked to Mom and Dad and people that knew me and everything before I was even hired. And it was such a stupid little job. I was just a clerk typist. But I remember I was working out there, and I was living with my cousin, Nani Barris, and there in Ogden. And she invited me to go with her to a USO picnic. They'd ask her if she'd play the piano. She was a good pianist. And she was also a good singer. She says, "Why don't you come along with me?" And so I went with her. And there's this really, we went on a watermelon bus up this canyon. And there was this really nice looking soldier.
He was, too.
Yeah, he was in the Air Force. And he had this uniform on. And he had this nice grin and beautiful eyes, brown eyes. And I got to visiting with him, talking to him, and I fell for him, I'll tell you. His name was Gordon Kleins, and he asked me for a date, and we started going together, and I fell in love, I'll tell you, I fell hard. And he came up to the valley with me. He had been stationed in Alaska, and he really enjoyed being up there, and it reminded him a lot of Star Valley. And he also loved my family. He loved my mom and dad, and he got along really well with my brothers and sister. And he just, I think he thought as much of my family as he did me.
Oh, I did.
But
he sure was a nice,
yeah,
nice man.
And he was from Kentucky. He had this southern drawl, and he was just a good man, and he was discharged that November, and we had met each other in June and went together all summer, and we never had any money or anything. He didn't have much being a soldier. He was a sergeant in the Air Force there, but he didn't have much pay, and I remember we could get a a milkshake for a quarter. And oh, they were so good. I remember how good they were. And we came up to the valley quite often that summer. And then when he was discharged, he went back to Kentucky. And we got engaged before he went back. And then he came back in December, and we were married. Mom and Dad came down and were our witnesses. We got married in Salt Lake at the county office, I guess you'd call it. It wasn't very romantic, but it was nice. We, for our honeymoon, we stopped at a motel in Ogden. And then when we got back to Star Valley, we had a what they called a shower in those days. They didn't call them receptions, did they, Marge?
No,
bridal shower. Had a bridal shower for me, and everybody came. The people were really good. They came, and I remember how nice it was, I thought. Then 3 days later, we got on a bus. It was so romantic. And it took us 3 days. We moved back to Richmond, Kentucky. And that's where we started our married life together. He had a job there in Anderson Plumbing. He was a plumber, and he didn't like it very good. But that was how our married life started out. I remember when we first moved back to Kentucky, and I met his mother and dad, and she had fixed supper, and she had Southern biscuits. Oh, they were so good. She cooked them, baked them in her old wood stove. She had a wood stove there, and I just remember how good they were and how nice they were, and how different. It was really hard to adjust to that Southern way of life. It was so much different than out here. It was quite an adjustment.
Tell about your red coat.
Oh, yes. See, we got married in 1951, and that was when they had colored and white on all of the drinking fountains, and there was definitely black and white in the South. People had this definite, there was a place in town that they called Nigger Town, and there was discrimination. It was very, very obvious. And I had a red coat. It was bright red. And Gordon said, "I don't want you to wear it here. I don't want you to wear that coat here." And I says, "Well, what's the matter with it? I thought it was a good-looking coat." He says, "That's what the black people wear." He says, "They wear bright colors, and it just wouldn't be right for you to wear it." So I got me a coat that was more suitable. I don't remember what color I got, but I never wore that red coat when I was in Kentucky. And it was there was definitely discrimination in those days,
I should say. Martha, when we left off at our last interview, we were talking about when you had gotten married and moved back to Richmond, Kentucky. Can you tell us a little more about living in Kentucky?
Well, as I remember, it was quite a cultural shock. It was so much different than Wyoming, and I was intrigued with the people. They were so nice and friendly, and Gordon's family treated me really, really good. And I just didn't realize how many black people there were in the world. I'd never seen, never been exposed to different types of people. In Star Valley, we're all the same color, and it was quite an eye-opener. I remember when I worked at, I went to work at the depot there as a clerk typist, and I had some good friends that were black. I especially remember one Christmas party that we had, and we had some mixed nuts, and I was talking to this black girl. Her name was Dorothy, and she was really a nice lady. But I says, "Oh, I really do like nigger toes." Doesn't that sound like something I'd say, Marge?
It surely does.
I was so embarrassed, and she looked so shocked. And that's what we call Brazil nuts out here in Wyoming, but I just wasn't thinking. And so I apologized to her, and she was real nice about it. But, you know, I just wasn't used to being around other types of people, and it was a good eye-opener, and I enjoyed living there, but I did get really, really homesick.
Tell us about Granny and Grandpa.
Gordon's grandfather, and he called him Granddaddy, and he only had one eye. His eye had been put out years before when he was riding a horse, and he'd run into a tree that had a kind of a thorn on it, and it put his eye out. But he was sure a good guy, and he was very active. He loved to walk. He'd walk everywhere, and at that time, when we got married, he was in his 70s. And I remember he came out to see us a year or two later. It was when Val was a baby. Well, about 3 or 4 years later. And Gordon worked over to town as a mechanic in Afton, and Granddaddy got bored, and he says, "Where'd you say it was that Gordon worked?" And so I took him out on the lawn and pointed over to town to show him where he was. "Oh, that ain't 2 fur a piece." And he started walking, and he walked clear to Afton to see Gordon. He just walked everywhere. He was quite a guy. And they lived in this quaint little house, exactly like the ones that you see in the, when you hear about hillbillies. And they had a pump in the kitchen, and no indoor plumbing, and they didn't have electric lights at that time. This was in 1951, and, well, 1952. And Grandma Whitaker wore a cap or a bonnet all the time, and I just see her sitting there in her rocker, rocking back and forth and singing her old spiritual songs. And she had worked so hard through the years that she was all bent over and couldn't even straighten up. She'd worked so hard making a living. They only had a few acres there, and they raised backer, tobacco, and that's what they call it, was backer. And she and Granddaddy had a kind of a strange marriage. They hardly even ever talked to each other, and she had her sugar bowl, and he had his, and They had a strange relationship, but they were interesting people. And Gordon really loved to be down there because he hated this being in town. He was a country boy, and his dad worked in town in a lumber yard, and he wasn't very educated, and he had to work really hard to make a living. And Granny, his mother, was a good woman, Mary Frances. She was a very religious person. She was a Jehovah's Witness, and she'd never cut her hair. It was really long. I still remember how she would undo the bun that she put on her. She would wrap it up into a bun to wear to work and things, but she would take it down and brush it, and it was way down below her waist. I imagine it would have been almost to her feet. It was so long. And she was a very good person. She only had 2 children, just Jen and Virginia, that we called her Jen and Gordon. And she was a good woman. I thought a lot of her. And I got pregnant right away, of course. I think it was 9 months after we got married, when Bill was born. And Gordon didn't like his work. He was a he worked as a plumber. So I have a lot of empathy for Jerry and some of the messes that he gets into. And Gordon just did not like it. And so we decided to move back to Wyoming. And we came back when I was about six and a half months along. And he got work in Ogden, Utah, as a, he worked at a meat plant. And it was hard work and everything, but he liked it better than plumbing. And we lived in a trailer. We bought us a trailer, and that was quite an experience.
It was after Bill was born when you were hurt.
Yes, that was probably my next... I've had a lot of traumatic things happen to me in my life, I'll tell you. This trailer we lived in didn't have a bathroom. It was very small. It was only 32 feet. And we all went to a restroom where we'd all, you know, everybody would go. And I went out early one morning, it was about 5, to use the restroom. Bill was a baby at that time. And, of course, I went barefooted because it was early. And when I grabbed a hold of the metal handle on our trailer, it had a short in the trailer, I guess, and I grounded it for some reason. And it felt like a big hand just grabbed me and threw me. It was awful. I was shocked, and it just threw me down on the ground, and I screamed, and Gordon had already gone to work. But there was a neighbor heard me, and he came over, and that was my first taste of whiskey. He gave me a shot of whiskey because he could see that I was in, my heart needed stimulating or something because I was in a bad state. And they took me to the hospital, and the doctor said if there had been more current going through the lines, it was early and people weren't using their electricity that much, it probably would have killed me. And I couldn't use my arm. It actually turned black and blue, and it was quite useless. I couldn't change Bill or anything for 2 or 3 months. And my neighbors were real good to help me. And that's when Gordon learned to... That was the only time. In those days, husbands didn't help with their children like they do now. But he had to change Gordon and or Bill and take care of him when he was home. But that was quite an experience to be shocked like that.
I should say.
And after that, my arm never would stay in. If I would shake rugs hard or something, it would fall, it'd come out of the socket. And it still does occasionally. It must have weakened my shoulder or something.
That's really traumatic.
Mm-hmm, it was.
And then what do you remember next? What was your next exciting?
Well, maybe this is a good time to mention my children. Mm-hmm. I was blessed with 5 good children. Bill was my first child, and he was born, he was the first grandchild, and that first grandchild for my mother and dad. Well, it probably was, no, it wasn't for Gordon. His older sister had a child by then. But I remember Bill was just the apple of everybody's eye. He was cute, and you remember, don't
I
you, Marge?
Do. I thought he was the prettiest thing I'd ever seen.
And he was a good baby, and he was all smiles. And then Bob, after that, we worked out here for a while, and then it was about that time that the GI Bill got going, and Gordon was a veteran, and so he decided to go back and get his mechanical training, and so we decided to move back to Kentucky. And that's where Bob was born, back in Kentucky. We were living in Lexington, Kentucky, and Gordon was going to a mechanical school there. He graduated there. and became an auto mechanic. And I enjoyed living there. We had some good neighbors, and Lexington was a nice town to live in. And then when Bob was about 7 months old, we moved back west. I think Gordon got used to the mountains and loved the west. And so after he graduated in and became a mechanic, we applied at a garage in Idaho Falls. And we moved to Idaho Falls, Idaho. And he got a job at Browning Chevrolet there. And that's where we lived until my brother Dee had built this home in Star Valley, and he had bought 80 acres from my dad. And then he got restless, and he had his degree and decided he didn't want to stay in Star Valley. And so they asked if Gordon and I'd be interested in buying the house and the land. That's probably one of the best things we ever did. It was at that time, in 1956, that we bought our place here and moved back. And then we had Val 3 years later. That was the three boys. And then I had a series of miscarriages, three in a row. And Dr. Worthen said I was probably going to be a habitual miscarrier because I couldn't seem to carry a baby after that. But thankfully, I was able to have my daughters. And there's 5 years between Val and Margie. And then I had Margie and Carol. And Carol, we called her our Colorado dividend because Gordon had gone, after he'd been mechanic for a few years, he realized we weren't getting anywhere. Yet mechanics didn't make much money. We used to get along on $260 a month, if you can believe it. I don't know how we ever did it, Marge. Do you?
No,
in those days?
Larry made $2 an hour. I don't know.
It was bad. We just didn't make much money. And he says, we're just going further behind all the time, Ma. He called me Ma. We've got to do something. And so he decided to follow construction. And he worked out at the Flaming Gorge Dam when they built it. And he really enjoyed that. That was out near Vernal. And we were able to put a little bit of money away by then and were able to buy a few cows. And that kind of helped us on the farm. And then we had a chance to go to Mount Rose, Colorado. After he'd worked on the dam there in Flaming Gorge, he got some experience in supervision and in working concrete. So he was offered a job in building a dam in Mount Rose, Colorado, and that we moved there. And that was when Bill was about a freshman in high school. And I don't know how we ever did it. We packed everything up in our pickup and moved out there and moved everything we had in the back of a pickup. We didn't have much. And Mac and Dion lived here in the house while we were in Colorado. They had moved back to help Dad on the farm at that time and be a partnership in the farm. And so we called Carol. I got pregnant with Carol while we were in Colorado, and we called her the Colorado Dividend. She was so cute, and everybody made a fuss over her because I was the only one in that group of friends that I had out there that had a baby, and it was fun. And I think that was a good move for us, though. I think it was good for the kids. Right now, my daughter Margie they're going to move to Mexico for 2 years. And if I thought moving five children was hard, they've got nine children. and they're going to move. I don't know how they're going to do it, but I think they're excited about it. And I think it'll be a good move for them. I think it's good for kids to broaden their horizons. And so that's my good family. I really feel like being a mom is one of the most wonderful things that a woman can do. And sometimes we get depressed thinking we haven't really accomplished much in this life, and then you look at your good family and you realize that it's been worth it. Don't you agree?
That's what life's all about.
It is. And they're all good people and have, I think, probably one of the hardest things in my life was the fact that Gordon, I married outside the church, and it's always been a bit of a conflict. But Gordon was such a good man, and he was honest, and the kids loved him a lot, and he was a good father, and I think it it's made them good people.
Well, he always supported your boys when they went on their missions.
He did.
And that was admirable.
You bet. He he would encourage them to go to church, and he didn't care to go himself, but he would encourage them to go. And he, I think, in fact, one of my daughters once said, "Mom, I think the fact that we were never expected to toe the line like maybe the bishop's son or people that are very religious have to toe the line. I think we wanted to. You know, we weren't forced to be good and didn't feel the pressure."
Totally true.
And I think that's true. And I think we had an annual, well, it was sometimes every 2 years, I should say, we would go back to Kentucky. Gordon was very loyal to his family, and he wanted to go back every other Christmas. And so we would save our time. Of course, in Star Valley, that would be Christmas time that we could get away. And we would go back to Kentucky for 2 weeks. And my kids talk about it a lot now, how much they enjoyed those trips. And Gordon loved it because he could go back and eat Southern cooking again, and he would always gain at least 20 pounds, and and he would pick up his drawl more. Every time we'd go back, he'd start talking more Southern, and he loved his family, and he loved Kentucky.
I'll bet they were hard trips in the car driving back there.
Oh, my heavens.
Babies and...
Oh, yes.
Children in long ways. And
oh, I'll say. That was before Interstate.
Uh-huh.
And
tell them about your dog.
Well, that's one of our family's favorite stories. We had a little black dog that was all black, and we called him Nigger. We stopped in Kansas City one time to get gas, and of course, we let Nig out. We called him Nig, unless we were yelling at him. And when we got ready to go, after we'd gassed up, Gordon says, "Well, get out. Let's get Nig back in here." And so, of course, I got out, and I says, "Hey, Nigger, hey, Nigger." And there was a lot of black fellows that looked to me like, Gordon says, "My hell, get in the car. Let's get out of here." He was so embarrassed. But of all those times that we went back there, we never had a serious accident.
Mm, that's wonderful.
And there was no seat belts.
I know.
And we, I think our kids learned a lot of geography, you know. Yeah. And when we'd go across the Mississippi River and the Missouri and the big cities and everything, I think it was quite an education for him.
Mm-hmm,
and you have had the same experience with your kids, haven't you, Marge?
Traveling after I've been married, yet, or after I've been alone, why, mm-hmm. I have gone with them a lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you've learned a lot of American history.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Yeah, I think so too. So I think the fact that I married someone from a different culture has been a really good for our family, because we have learned to be more tolerant, and we have learned different ways that people live, and I think it's been good. Been good.
I think so too. Would you like to elaborate any more on what went on during those growing up years?
Well, we just had a lot of good times. Our kids have all commented on how hard they worked on the farm, but how good it was. Even the girls didn't mind moving sprinklers, and didn't mind haying, and didn't mind, there was times when we had to get the bales in when there was a snowstorm coming or something, and the kids remember how hard they'd work, and we'd all, it was a unified effort to do it, and they all learned to work, and I think that's
a blessing.
It is a blessing. I think that's the problem with a lot of the people, young people now. They've never learned how to work, and
responsibility.
I think so too. Yeah. And I do remember all of the good times we had up to my mother's and dad's, and you remember that too, Marge.
Oh yes, we'd all meet up there. I went with one fellow from Utah, and he came. He says, "Do you think your folks would adopt me?"
Yes.
Because he enjoyed coming up there and visiting with them so much.
Yeah.
And they all did. They all felt welcome, and it was.
I remember all that. So I think Mom and Dad had a way of making people feel so welcome, and there was that sign that my son Bob made that. Sai and Lel's table. What did it say exactly?
Something about stories. I can't
remember. That Sai and Lel were the only ones that were exempt or something.
Could tell the stories, and they were
bull stories.
Yeah, it was.
And that old table has a lot of good memories. We used to really enjoy going. Of course, I guess I better mention the burning of the barn story.
Oh yeah.
And that was my son Bob and Gary, his cousin. It was on the 4th of July, and they were just little. I think Bob was about 5 or 6, and Gary was 4, a little younger. And they thought they were going to build a fire. And they went out into Grandpa's barn, and they had heard that if you build a ring around it, it would keep the fire from spreading. So they built a ring of straw, which was really, really smart. And they started the fire, and Bob says, all of a sudden it got away from us, and he says, we didn't know what, we were so scared. And of course they jumped out of the barn and ran. And Bob ran clear down to our place and hid behind the chair. And Gary
went in the house.
He went in Grandma's house, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And then we were all sitting around the table talking, and someone glanced out, the barn's on fire, and it was, the flames were just shooting. And they called the fire department, and then they says, where are the kids? And Mac was in high school playing sports at that time, and he, and we couldn't find Bob, and so Mac ran down here, and I know he broke a speed record coming down here to see if Bob was down here, and he found him behind the chair. Thank goodness. They thought he was in the fire. But it completely destroyed the barn. And that was a hard lesson, I'll tell you. But everybody was so thankful that they were okay. But they've never been able to live it down.
Yeah, that could have been really traumatic.
I should say. And we had everybody in Fairview was here enjoying all the excitement.
And it was Mother's birthday.
Yeah, it was.
And we were all going to have a cookout.
Yeah, were you there?
No, I saw the fire engines heading this way. I lived in Afton.
At that time, yeah. That was quite a day. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tell us about your hunting camps.
Well, they're a big part of our family. It started way back. Dennis is the one that should tell about this, but at first it was only men. And I think Gordon said that his first hunt was 1951 or 52. It was right after we got married, that fall. We were married December of 51, and his first hunt was in 52. And he remembers, he said Dad was going up the Grays River Canyon in the old yellow truck, and he was in with him, and he was whistling and looking around, and the horses were stomping around in the back. And Gordon said he'd look down at that river and think, oh, we're going to wreck. I know we are. The horses are going to pull us off. But Dad was just so relaxed. And so Gordon says, well, if the old S&B isn't going to worry, I'm not going to worry either. And he said when they got up to camp and everybody was deciding where they were going to hunt, they said, well, I'll meet you at the saddle. And Gordon thought at the time, what in hell is a saddle? He didn't know what they were even talking about. Mm-hmm. But he said, I pretended like I knew, and I was able not to get lost, and it wasn't long until I knew what a saddle was. And we've had some wonderful trips up there through the years. There was a bunch of Cheyenne guard men that Dan knew, and they're the ones that bought the first cook tent and presented it to the camp, and they were National Guard friends of Dennis's, and they really enriched our camp, and they were fun to be around. It wasn't until...
And then Uncle Luce and Wobbly used to come out.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad you mentioned Dad's brothers from Brigham City. They were a big part of our camp, too. Uncle Lauren and Uncle Arden and Uncle Merlin. And like March says, Uncle Lauren had false teeth, and they were kind of... He would flip them out, and he thought that was really funny. And so they nicknamed him Luce and Wobbly. He was quite a guy, and they were all good hunters, good shots. They could really shoot good. Uncle Arden was the one that shot the bears. Mm-hmm. He shot a mother bear, a cub. He shot a cub, and then the mother bear started running toward him, and so he shot her too. So he got two bear rugs. He's lucky he wasn't hurt there. And Uncle Merlin was so fussy, he'd always he'd hike out. I can't remember him hunting that much, but he sure loved to hike.
Well, he'd always make a trail. He'd point where he was going so he'd know how to find his way back, which was smart.
And he'd make trails with his cane in the snow. Mm-hmm. He'd point which way they were going, and he was a fun guy to have around, too. And they were a good part of our camp. It wasn't until 4 or 5 years later that they finally let women start going. And Gail and I really made a big mistake our first year of hunting. They were letting us shoot guns at that time. And we had gone... hunting, and the name of the place that we stopped to go hunting that time was Hotfoot Creek, and it was really an appropriate name because Gail and I were out hunting by ourselves, and these two animals came out of the trees, and Gail says, oh, look, there's some elk, and I should have said something. And I was excited, and she lay down on the ground and went bang, bang. And both of them fell dead, and there were two moose.
I hope they don't edit this.
Well, it happened so many years ago, and oh, that was terrible. And I was so excited that I just shot my gun straight up in the air. I thought that'd be the safest.
It was.
But when Dan and Gordon heard the shooting and came and saw what had happened, they were just heartsick. They didn't know what to do. They were just dumbfounded. And of course, they chewed us out, and then the only thing we could think to do, or they could think to do, was to pull them off in the bushes and just get out of there. But that was a terrible thing for us to do, and we were excited and just made a big mistake. And they've never let us live it down. Dan put a picture of a moose, pasted it on their fridge, and every day he'd say, "Now this," well, a deer, an elk, and a moose. And he'd say, "This is a moose, Gail, and this is an elk." And it was a long time. After that, they wouldn't let us take guns. We could just go hunting with them, but we were not allowed to shoot anymore. But I don't blame them.
I don't either.
But the bull stories that we heard up at hunting camp, and the just getting out in the beautiful outdoors and everything.
And they always played cards at night.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And the old cook stove, and it was just a lot of fun. We enjoyed that a great deal. And are you getting restless?
No.
But that was one of our choice memories, too. And then our family reunions. We've always mm-hmm. had good family reunions. Mm-hmm. And swimming and camping. And we never camped as much as Mac and Dion. My daughters used to go with them more than they did us, because we were always so busy. By the time Gordon would work at a public job and then come home and get the farm work done, we didn't have time to take our kids camping and things. It was just, we just didn't have time. But we did have a lot of fun times together and enjoyed a lot.
I should say. We're lucky to have a family unit. We do.
You bet. And do I guess I should go on and tell, there's been a lot happened since then. When our kids started going on missions, all three of the boys went on missions and filled honorable missions. Bill went to California, and Bob went to Canada. And poor Shy Val went clear to England. And he got really homesick. He said at one time he even considered leaving his mission and going to Kentucky and staying with Granny. But then he kind of got used to it, and then he filled a good mission too. And then they all got married and have found good, honorable mates, and have been happy, and we've had a lot of traumatic things happen. When Bill fell, he was going to school in Logan, and he was also working construction, and they were building a parking garage up on campus up at Utah State. And they were living in Logan at that time. And he isn't sure what happened, but he slipped and fell, and fell 25 feet. And he was really hurt badly. It broke both of his arms, his one hand real badly, and the other arm. And it's just lucky, if he lit on his head, it would have killed him. But it took him quite a while to get over that. And while he was recovering from that, he went back to college and got his teaching certificate. And he taught school in Salt Lake for a while. And then they moved back to Star Valley, and he has made his living as a contractor. It's been hard on his hands and everything because it's a hard way to make a living. He had hoped to get on teaching up here, but it just didn't work out. He would have had to teach in shop, and they just didn't need shop teachers. And so, and then it was a sad thing when their second daughter, Becky, got cancer. That was a traumatic thing. And it happened about the same time that my dear husband, Gordon, got his illness. Gordon had been getting quite thin, and we didn't know what was the matter. But when he finally went in for a checkup, you know how men are, they don't like to go to the doctor. His blood was 2 pints low, and they had to give him transfusions, and they sent us to a specialist down in Salt Lake, and I'll never forget that, how traumatic that was. The doctor took a bone marrow, what would you call
sample.
It? Sample. Sample, yeah. And he came back and he told us that something was wrong with Gordon's blood. And he says, I don't know why he told us that, but he says, I only give you 2 years to live, Gordon. And that was such a nightmarish thing. I'll never forget what a shock that was. Of course, we didn't believe it. And I remember coming home that day, and we were coming through Morgan, and Gordon says, I've got to stop here. I think all of a sudden it just hit him. And he says, I've got to just stop. And we stopped and sat there in the pickup, and he's... It was such a shock, but he went on and prevailed, and he had his spleen was enlarged, and he had to go through surgery and just about died, but he never gave up. We had some nightmare times down in the hospital in Salt Lake, and but he always thought he was going to get better, and he did. He lived about 2 years,
mm-hmm.
And it was a hard thing for us and for the family.
I know the one time the family had been called, and it was during hunting time, and he told them down there in the hospital he was going to go hunting with his boys,
mm-hmm.
And I remember Bob telling me that what he had said, and he says they say that it's not possible, but he did live.
He did. He actually got better, and we went back to Kentucky and had a nice trip. We went to California, and Val was living in California at that time. We went and saw him, and we enjoyed some good times together before he got bad again. So, the good thing about that was that Becky went through her terrible bout with cancer, and she's a beautiful young mother now and has 2 beautiful children, and she licked hers. And that's a good thing about the whole experience. She was able to get over her cancer. And so that was probably the hardest thing that we had to face in our marriage was, of course, the death of my husband. And he's been gone 17 years now. And
how old was he then?
59, just 59, and that was way too young. He had a lot of living to do and a lot of things he would have enjoyed. We were going to do so many things. He wanted to go back to Alaska on the Alcan Highway. That was one of our dreams, to go on a trip up there. He had been stationed in Alaska for 2.5 years before he came to Utah. Maybe I better tell you what they said to him when they found out he was going to be transferred to Utah. They says, well, you better watch out, one of those Mormon girls will get you. And he laughed. He thought that was sure funny. that I did. I'm coming.
And he was a good guy.
Yeah, he was. We had a lot of good memories. He left a good legacy. I've had a good life, and I'm not through yet. We're still plugging along, aren't we, Marge?
We keep track of each other.
We do. And
enjoy each other.
I should say. I think of all the things that have happened, losing both of our parents in these last few years, and it was hard to lose Dee. He died a year or two before Gordon did. And that was such a shock to our family, for him to die so young. And that's just the way life is. But we have much to be thankful for.
Would you like to bear your testimony again?
Well, I would. I'd like to say, I think as we realize that our lives are getting closer to the end, I've always kind of been afraid of what's going to be in the future, but I think I'm more resigned to the fact that that I have all of my family sealed to me now, and Gordon never did join the church when he was alive, but we had his work done, and I know he's accepted it. He wanted to be baptized before he died, but we just didn't get it done. And I love the church, and I love my family. I love my life, and I love my country. I think we should be so thankful for this wonderful country we live in, and I hope we can hang on to all of our freedoms or more. The freedoms that we have now, we've let a lot of them go. And I'm just thankful that I raised my family when I did. I think that a lot of the freedoms that my kids had here in Star Valley, going up the canyon and playing and all the things that they cherished are gone now because our valley is changing so much. We have too many no trespassing signs, and people are moving in that are changing. Our farm economy is not the same. Farms are becoming a thing of the past. We're becoming just another Jackson, and it breaks my heart. I hate to see it.
I long for the good old days. And
I think we lived
in the best life we had.
I think, Marge, that we lived in the best of times.
I do too. I definitely do.
I really do. I think with all of this electronic, computerized society, I feel so helpless sometimes. And I think that it was a lot better when things were a little more simple. But I have a love for history, and I like to write about it, and I like to collect histories, and I hope that I can hand this legacy down to my children, and I want them to know that I love them, and I'm proud of every one of them. I'm proud of my family. We have a rich heritage.
We certainly do.
And I think we realize that, and sometimes we feel like we probably don't measure up like we should, but we can't be perfect. Besides, perfect people are sometimes kind of boring, aren't they?
We're not boring.
No. So, I think that's...
Thank you, Martha. That's very nice. I enjoyed learning more about my sister that I didn't know. So this has been a blessing to me.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it too, Marge.
Thanks.